Welcome to Your Health Reset, where we address the real root causes behind health issues today to get you rapid results on your health journey so you can be who you came here to be, mind, body, and spirit. I'm your host, Sinclair Keneally, survivor of complex chronic illness, expert on resolving root causes, and co-founder of Detox Rejuvenation and Meditation RX. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. We are recording one of the most requested segments from us. Everybody wants to know what Michael's animal-based diet is, how he came to these practices for himself, why he emphasizes it in our practice, and what is the big deal anyway. So thanks for doing this with me, Michael.
Thanks for setting this up.
Let's start with your own personal journey with food, because you've tried literally every diet, every cleanse, every food filter out there. How did you arrive at animal-based carnivore?
Yeah, I think just through many years of experimentation, I started exploring different food filters around 2003, I think. And my first foray into eating really intentionally was, I think, Joel Fuhrman, and just reading his book, Eat to Live, going through the whole plant-based kind of thing back then. I know he was very partnered with Whole Foods back in the day, and that's what I thought was the healthiest way to eat. And it may be for some people. It didn't happen to be for me. And I struggled early on trying to follow that diet. Parts of it worked really well. Parts of it didn't.
What didn't work about it for you?
I just don't think it's kind of hard to say, because there was a lot of, for myself personally, a lot of different health issues going on. So it was always hard to separate, like, what was causing the reaction? Was it food? Was it something? Was it a parasite issue? What was it? And I just didn't know. And there wasn't a lot of information out there, certainly not online. It just wasn't widely available. It's more available now, but everybody's got an opinion. Everybody thinks that their way of eating, their way of doing things is the best, because that's their experience. We're all trying to find our way in health and try to find our way in this process. So back then, I was doing a very plant-based, mostly vegetarian, vegan for periods of time. And then did that for many years. I would say, I don't know how many years, probably 10 years or so, that I kind of explored that. Smoothies, blending. And I had some successes, some failures. Did get a lot better during short periods of doing that. And I think when we have initial success working any kind of a protocol, more is better, and we want to just continue that success. And that's what I did. It never would have occurred to me to focus on more, you know, meat-based diet or animal-based diet back then. That just was not, just would not have occurred to me back then. So nobody that I knew was doing that. So it wasn't widely known about in my circles anyway.
Okay, so how did you come to the decision that those food filters that you were trying were not working for you? And when did you start going more animal-based?
Yeah, I think I got into the more juicing, more blending, just thinking more is better. And I spent a few years just kind of like doing a lot of juicing, a lot of blending, all organic, tons of lectins, definitely had some nightshades in the mix, like not following the food filters that we have now.
And just running isolate the better.
Yeah, the more the better. And I was just running into more and more issues, developing more and more sensitivities, and something just was not working in all of that. And I became much more open-minded over time. And I was like, maybe I need to explore. I saw a few people early on doing carnivore, I think as early as maybe 2016, 2017. And I was like, that is super nuts. Why would anybody do that? It's clearly not like, it was the total opposite of what I was doing at the time. And I was not open-minded to it at all. I thought it was very nutty, and I didn't think it was going to work out for the people doing it. So
I think they were still juicing crates and crates of produce at that point.
Yeah, yeah. 10, 15 pounds of vegetables a day. We would juice that. We had a professional juicer. We had one of the pure juicers, which is a very high-end cold press juicer, and we were juicing a lot.
Yeah.
And
so the problem becomes what to juice over time. Right, because so yeah, many became, those recipes are histamine bombs and oxalate bombs and lectin bombs.
Yeah, it'd be very much, yeah, what are we going to juice? And if you're juicing the root vegetables, you can make a lot of juice for less money, but then you're higher in sugar, higher in carbohydrates, you're feeding possibly yeast, parasites, infections, those kinds of things. It is a definite sugar bomb. If you're juicing celery, that's an easy one to juice. Things like cucumbers, It's another lectin bomb. Of course, you can seed it, you can de-skin it, and then you can juice celery or cucumber. Interestingly enough, on the Gerson therapy list, which is what we're following, like a modified, some of the Gerson recommendations in terms of what to juice. And they don't recommend juicing cucumbers. And it's probably because of the lectins, but a lot of people develop stomach discomfort, gas and bloating when they're juicing a lot of cucumbers. So that wasn't working out too well. And I remember we had bought I think it was around the time the Plant Paradox came out, and we had just bought, I think it was around 35 pounds of cucumbers, organic cucumbers, at the store. And that book came in the mail, had ordered it from Amazon. I remember reading it with you on the porch, and we were going through the food list, and we were like, wow, man, that 35 pounds of cucumbers, maybe we shouldn't juice that. Maybe that is what is causing some of our issues. And so we ended up not juicing the cucumbers, and I think we ended up giving them to a friend or something. And yeah, that was an interesting experience. So we started cutting out the lectins from the juices, and that helped a little bit. But again, then the juicing becomes more and more limited, and we're relying a lot of citrus, lemons, and limes. As a result, running into more histamine issues. And yeah, the list just got shorter and shorter.
Yeah, that was a big deal for you, the histamine stuff.
Yeah, I would get immediate reactions to the juice and not being able to really read the signs at the time, because this was quite a while ago, but just it got really confusing. And I was like, how can juice be bad? This is all vegetables. That's the most nutritionally dense food on the planet. What could go wrong? This has to be the right thing. So I just continued on. I'm extremely stubborn when I have an idea. Yeah, as many people are. Yeah, it's when you're fixed on an idea, or when I'm fixed on an idea, I'm just going to keep going.
Okay.
I'm trying to be more open-minded now.
Okay.
With varying degrees of success. So
as the ultimate problem solver in our practice, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
So how did you foray into that carnivore, animal-based, protein-forward way of thinking? How did you get started on that?
We were still doing some of the juicing, and I was doing a lot of sauteed vegetables, and I was just craving meat. I was craving more fatty cuts of meat, ribeyes. We happened to live near the co-op at the time. And so every evening, pretty much after work, I would go in the evening at some point, walk to the store, pick up a ribeye, saute some vegetables, which I think you enjoyed. And, we did a lot of cauliflower and broccoli. We had a grass-fed goat cheese that I tolerated fairly well, and we were able to make some really interesting sauteed dishes.
Vegetables. That's why I was putting up with you, but I was absolutely horrified by the meat stuff. I thought you were defecting to the other side.
Right. Yeah. It was a trip. It was an interesting time. So I was just exploring it, and I was not reacting to the meat, and I was not really reacting to those vegetables. It was a lot of Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, broccoli, a little bit of goat dairy, and doing really well on that, not having any significant issues. And then typically after we would eat, or maybe it was before, we would do some juicing. I would always react to the juice, but I wouldn't react to the meat or those particular vegetables at the time. So of course the cruciferous vegetables, those are going to be low, no lectins, low oxalates or no oxalates. And for some people, they tolerate that quite well. So I just by accident happened into that. And that was really like a little bit of a turning point for me. And I always did pretty well on it.
And you followed all the carnivore players in the space, the ones that are spouting, this is the only way to eat. What do you see happening with people now that you've brought this into our practice? And
yeah, I think for people that are highly sensitive, especially if they're sensitive to, if they're having like the mast cell issues or skin issues, or they have any kind of parasite issue, I think a carnivore diet can work quite well. And I think a lot of people in the carnivore space, maybe they just don't talk about it, but there are these underlying issues. They're addressing it through the diet. They're not necessarily addressing the underlying issue. And I don't think diet alone is enough. I think you still have to take the binders. You still have to do some of these other things that we talk about. And then you can have a huge amount of success. And I think we see people moving through that pretty quickly. And as I said, it's not easy, or maybe it's not right for everyone. I don't think there's a one size fits all, but many people do quite well on it. And that's been my experience.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the finer nuances
what are the meats that you suggest relying on versus other meats that you'd be more cautious around?
Yeah. So if I go out and I have a steak, it's not grass fed, grass finished, which it never will be if you're going out, I'm going to have a reaction to it. So I know that there's something wrong with the beef. Maybe it's factory farmed. Maybe it's the animals eating grain, or whatever it may be. It's just not as clean as it probably should be. And I'm going to have a reaction to it. And I think some people might do better on it. Some people might not. But if you're highly sensitive, eating out and getting a piece of not grass-fed, grass-finished meat, likely going to have a reaction to it. It could be in the oils or how it's prepared, like any of those things. And I will typically, if I do go out, say I'm allergic to seed oils and I would like the steak to be cooked in butter. And if they don't know what seed oils are, could be an issue. For, and if they're not familiar, like we actually went to a restaurant recently and I don't think this person like knew what butter was. I was very surprised. It takes all kinds and there's all kinds of different people out there. So you have to be able to be persistent. And if you're not sure, then probably go somewhere else. But I think if you can find a grass-fed, grass-finished piece of beef, like that's a good starting point. Okay. And then the issues that people run into, histamine issues, because meat is aged. It's typically aged 21 or 28 days, whatever it might be. And you can find non-aged meat sources, and we have plenty of sources to share. There's a lot of people looking for those sources right now. So you're going to pay more and it's going to be more difficult to find. There's a lot of sold out non-aged meats, but something to keep in mind, bison, lamb, like some of these other meat sources are not aged as long as beef. Mm-hmm. So that might be another way to reduce the histamine.
Yeah, so bison and lamb were typically aged 15 days versus beef, which is typically aged 21 days.
Right.
And so the more aged the meat, the higher the histamine issue, potentially for someone who's really sensitive on the histamine end of things. Yeah. That can make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people have a beef allergy for a variety of different reasons. There's
co-infections. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons for that.
But most common is histamine issue or gallbladder stagnation, which is basically can't digest fats very easily, transitioning slowly into a carnivore diet. If that's you, that's going to be a necessity because it's going to be a higher fat diet if you're doing it the way that we recommend, which is moderate fats, protein, limited vegetables. So that's
the okay. Approach. So grass-fed, grass-finished, ruminant animals, ideally less aged.
Yep.
Frozen fresh.
Exactly.
And what it's cooked in matters a lot. So you don't want a nightshade lectin balm sauce with rancid oils or seed oils.
Yeah. So you're going to cook in tallow, ghee, butter. You can grill. We have an Auto Wild, which is like a phenomenal grill. If you can, I think it's about $1,000, but you can cook a steak in 5 or 6 minutes and it heats up super fast. If you're doing this kind of diet, it's pretty much worth the investment. You can certainly saute or that adds more complications into the mix. So then you're heating up fats. That's fine, but you're still going to burn butter. You're going to burn the ghee. It's going to create additional issues potentially. So I think the cleanest way is just to grill. You don't have to burn it medium rare, somewhere in that, whatever is to taste. Some people get bored on the diet. I would just up your cooking game. If you're getting bored on this diet, it's a delicious diet. It's like you just need to maybe have different ways to prepare foods and become better at cooking. So that will help you a lot.
Yeah. So let's talk about some gray areas and where some people might be making some mistakes on the carnivore diet. Like if they're aiming to play a really clean game and they're not getting the results they want, let's talk about why that might be. Like,
yeah.
Which meats would you not recommend?
Yeah. So the areas where people get into trouble, if their first question is, can I eat chicken? I'm like, okay, it's not red alert, but there's a yellow light here. We need to navigate this. Birds are not eating grass. So they're eating seeds, bugs, whatever they're being fed.
Corn, soy, GMO stuff.
Yeah, the stuff from Purina that stopped all the chickens in the country from laying eggs because they poison the Purina. Like they're eating that. That's what they're eating. So then you're eating that. That's probably not good. You know, so I think birds are questionable. Fish is questionable in limited amounts, probably fine. Your mileage may vary, but it's mostly ruminant animals. So animals that are eating grass, that's the bottom line. You're eating animals that are eating grass. That's how you're going to have success. Many people are going to tolerate butter. Even if you have a dairy allergy, you may tolerate butter. Obviously, a raw grass-fed butter, that's going to be top of the list. It's not going to be Kerrygold or any of the commercially widely available butters. It's going to be more of a specialty thing. And so sourcing that's going to be one of the issues. So you're going to have to find something that's grass-fed. Ghee is usually very well tolerated. Even if butter's not tolerated, ghee is usually tolerated. Tallow is certainly tolerated. And those are going to be the primary fats you're going to want to focus on.
And why is ghee tolerated when butter is sometimes?
It just has to do with people have an allergy to the protein that's in the fat. And again, there's A1, A2. Some people don't tolerate A1. Some people tolerate A2. In general, cow's dairy, not really a primary food source that anybody should really focus on. Goat is usually tolerated. You can do goat butter, et cetera, et cetera. Some people tolerate cheeses, the aged cheeses. That's going to be very problematic. For people that are even considering this diet, it's going to be questionable just because you're doing this for a reason. Do you have a histamine issue? Yeah, probably. Do you have a parasite issue? Do you have these various like overgrowths? Like adding more kind of fermentation into the mix is usually not advisable. But hard cheeses can be well tolerated. Again, sheep, goat, those kinds of things. That's going to be better.
So why would somebody be histamine sensitive? Let's unpack that a little further because you just brought up a couple of great points and I want to make sure those are clear.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about root causes, but we're thinking mold, definitely thinking parasites, definitely thinking chronic, these chronic underlying infections, different toxicities, things that are overwhelming the immune system. It's going to create potentially a histamine issue. Could be oxalates maybe driving it. There's a lot of food factors. We've got all the food filters to help people navigate that. But typically, we can just reduce the reactivity over time by carnivore diet can be very helpful for that. So.
You also want to consider your environment. So in a high wireless radiation environment, so high EMF from your smart devices, from your Wi-Fi router, from cell phone towers, you can actually 10x your histamine load.
Yeah.
Just from those devices.
That's true. Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot of things to explore in that. People that are continuing to have the histamine issues, if I ask them, what's your body voltage when you're laying in bed? How many people have been able to answer that question? So far, it's zero. No, nobody's been able to answer that question. So I know,
so that's,
you know, without,
that means
that's good. There's more to explore
and problem solve.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have materials for that too for you guys.
Yeah.
So one of the things I just want to touch on lightly is how do people do carnivore wrong? We talked about the poultry being a little questionable. That can be difficult for folks. Not everybody can tolerate bone broth. For some people, it's a miracle food. For some people, that glutamate sensitivity makes it a no-go for at least the time being.
And yeah, it's not recommending any bone broth, not making any complications around it. No birds, no fish, grass-fed beef, lamb, bison, those kinds of things. Limited dairy.
And what about
probably
fish?
No A1 dairy. What about fish?
Yeah.
Fish in moderation, a couple times a month, totally fine. Obviously, people can debate all day, but it really comes down to the sourcing of the fish. Obviously, you can't eat fish out likely because it's probably factory farmed. And you could say the oceans are polluted. I have the suspicion that fish is largely like problematic. You can get wild caught Alaskan salmon. We used to shop at Vital Choice all the time. Cost per pound, it's not really a viable option for most people. But if budget's no issue, then Vital Choice did get bought out by 1-800-Flowers. So I don't know if they've kept up with the same standards that they used to have. But if you have a good source for fish, then, you know, go for it. In moderation.
What about those carnivore products that are popping up all over the market? Those carnivore crisps, the dried stuff, the bars that are just jerky.
Yeah. Like so that. It's going to be, those can work really well for some people. You know? But again, anytime you throw meat into a bag, it's going to be a histamine bomb for most people. Most people are going to react to that. If they're considering this diet, if they're in this course, probably dealing with some aspect of parasite, histamine, mold, like digestive issues, you may be contributing to the issue. Now, of course, if you're traveling, what would be the alternative? And that's always the question. So it's like you have to balance it out. Those things can work for some people. So I wouldn't write them off. I wouldn't go down like we need the organ capsules and blah, blah, blah. We used to do all that stuff as well. And I think people can have moderate success with the glandulars and the liver and all that sort of stuff. But don't really need it. I wouldn't spend the money there. I would just focus on buying the highest quality, you know, meat from the best sources that you can afford. That's pretty much the bottom line. And you could do ground beef. That's a cost effective way to do it. You could do sausage. We'll share some of our sources, but there's a company called Better Fed Beef. They have a non-aged beef sausage that has very few ingredients. It's literally two ingredients. And that can be extremely well tolerated. So even people with histamine issues, from a financial standpoint, pretty affordable. If you can eat for $20 a day, that's the budget for many people, I think. So I think if you're doing a combination of ground beef, again, is going to be when you grind up beef, there's this more surface area, there's more propensity to grow bacteria, more of a histamine bomb. But there are people that will tolerate that. It's definitely cost effective. So I think that's, you got to weigh the options. It's not everybody can eat
on the surfaces. Yeah, well, break down the histidine in the meat and increase the histamine content in it. So if you're histamine sensitive, you may have an issue. But
yeah,
if you're really thoughtful about where you source it, it's fresh ground, then you go straight to frozen, then you go straight to cooking it, and you don't put it in the fridge and leave it there and try to graze off of it for 3 days, you might be okay depending on how histamine sensitive you are.
Yeah. So I think that's a really good introduction. And, you know, I think one other thing to keep in mind, like anytime you're making a diet shift, take your time, take 6 or 8 weeks to transition. So it's not just going from raw juicing to strict carnivore diet. Like most people are going to have a reaction to that. And some reactions anytime you're switching your diet, that's totally normal. There's a microbiome shift that's happening. You're going to have some reactions. It's usually not the end of the world. You just kind of work through that.
Yeah. So you may have bowel frequency changes, digestive awarenesses, things that shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Very normal.
So in the short term, you may benefit from some additional digestive support. So if you don't have a gallbladder, for example, you might really benefit from using advanced TEDCA, one cap with a meal or ox bile.
And having the expectation, like, you're not going to feel better in 24 hours or 72 hours. Like, you want to allow it time to, you're transitioning. Maybe you're dumping oxalates. Maybe, you know, different things are happening. You're not feeding the yeast. Maybe there's a die-off reaction as a result of not feeding the yeast, that kind of thing. Expect to have some reactions. Expect it to take 6 or 8 weeks. And then after 8 weeks, reevaluate your progress and check in what's working about it.
So let's talk also about some carnivore players in this space really like to emphasize sugar bomb fruits and honey. How do you feel about that on the carnivore diet?
Definitely not. I don't see it as being needed or helpful or anything along those lines. I would just keep it simple, keep the snacks to a minimum. You're basically eating maybe one large meal a day, maybe two large meals a day. Certainly is not a calorie restricted diet. There's no need to lose a ton of weight. People's weight tends to normalize on this kind of diet. So people that want to lose weight, fantastic. If you want to gain weight, also can be fantastic. I think this kind of diet pairs really well with something like, we haven't really talked about it, but the blood flow restriction training, which we can definitely talk about, but KAATSU or blood flow restriction training, that's a way to really accelerate the progress of this diet.
Thanks. So last piece, we started talking about ox bile or TEDCA to help break down your food. You may benefit also from two other kinds of digestive support just in the short term. That'd be enzymes or HCL. Do you want to explain
this? Yeah, so CTZyme would be a good choice. That's Cellcore's enzyme product. That's a great one. Yeah, definitely the advanced TEDCA, taking that with meals, it's going to help with that bile flow issue. If you're having issues digesting fats, ox bile or TEDCA can be fantastic. And then HCL is a great one for a lot of people. Should just consider the idea that they're low in stomach acid, look into the HCL thing. That can be very helpful for resolving digestive issues. Yep.
Thanks for unpacking that, everybody.
Yeah.
Any last words of wisdom or encouragement for folks who are considering this as a possibility for themselves?
Yeah, I think, do you have to just eat meat? No, absolutely not. Like I mentioned previously, I stumbled on the cruciferous vegetable thing. You know, we were doing cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, a little bit of seasonings. I was doing the ribeye thing. Like, that worked fantastic. That worked really well for me. And I think everybody's tolerance is different. You could definitely cut out lectins. You could cut out nightshades. You could do some cruciferous vegetables or whatever vegetables you're tolerating. and add more meat into your diet. And maybe that's a transition step where you're taking 6 or 8 weeks, transitioning with that kind of diet, dialing things in, finding your food sources that work for you, costing things out, and that can be very effective. Some people do well, like some people might need some carbohydrates as they're transitioning, and then that need will go down over time. But having some apples or oranges or something like that, it's not going to move things forward for you. It may slow things down a little bit. I think you got to be reasonable with yourself. Maybe doing sweet potatoes, something like that could be helpful as a transition step.
Yeah.
So, and then some people do really well with like olives, avocados, like these kinds of things. It's not a one size fits all. It's like you need to learn what foods you react to. One of the benefits of the carnivore diet is it's the ultimate elimination diet, because when you're just eating meat, you're not eating these other things that can be so problematic for people.
So past that transition phase, say someone really commits to a carnivore or at least an animal protein forward, ruminant animals only diet and expects that transition of a few weeks for their digestive system to catch up to it, what might they expect to experience on the other side of that transition period?
I think many people, if you can resolve the sugar cravings, that's a huge win. If you can stabilize your blood sugar, that's going to help with any chronic health issue, help with parasites, help with virtually anything. Most people are like starving, or not, I don't know, most people, but many people are like really waiting for that next meal, and they just cannot wait to, in the evening, might maybe have a fruit or chocolate bar or ice cream, like whatever it may be. And that's what dictates the trajectory of their eating habits. So it's, if you can curb that a little bit, things tend to get a lot easier. So stabilizing blood sugar, I think normalizing weight is pretty par for the course for a lot of people. I think a lot of people can lose some weight or maybe gain some weight on this kind of diet. And I think it's a lot of health symptoms can be, at least on a basic level, addressed through this kind of diet. And is it going to detox mold or eliminate parasites from your system? Probably not. Will it give your body the building blocks to start chipping away at those issues? Yeah, I think it definitely can. So I think a lot of the gas and bloating can be just completely resolved through this kind of diet. A lot of the symptoms that people complain about can definitely be helped for a lot of people. It's going to come down to root causes.
Like anxiety, brain fog.
Yeah, it's definitely, in my mind, the best mental health diet for many people. Again, nothing is going to be one size fits all. It's always going to be individual. So if I make like a broad statement, it may not be true for you, but it's true for many people. Resolving blood sugar issues is a great way to address many of the ups and downs, anxiety, depression, those kinds of emotional roller coaster kinds of feelings. Very good for addressing that and definitely eliminating the reactivity piece, whether it's histamine or whatever it may be. That's great for mental health. I think it gives people a serious advantage in those areas.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I do not eat carnivore, like in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And yet the benefits that we see in our practice and in our group courses, and certainly what I witnessed in you, are absolutely undeniable. People who commit to this way of eating are, you know, pretty typically able to just rocket past their compatriots in the rest of the course that they're in with us. And I think it really empowers many people to tackle the deeper root cause work, because they're finally getting the nutrition that they need without the wild blood sugar swings, without the fermentation in the gut. And so they can actually have what they need to go after the parasites and the mold. You don't have to do it this way. Certainly for some people, it's a game changer.
Yeah. So maybe go through some of the foods that could be helpful while you're doing either the transition or maybe just including them in the diet. So maybe some of the fruits like apples, oranges, berries, melons, like those kinds of things perhaps could be helpful. I would say it's probably not going to move people's health picture forward, but as a transition step or just as a way to add some interesting foods to the mix, like that could be nice. Avocados, olives, like some squashes, like those kinds of things could be helpful.
The root veggies.
The root veggies, really, yes.
Flavor sensitive.
Yep. Yeah, sweet potatoes, yams, carrots, those kinds of things.
Versus, yeah.
I would definitely avoid fermented vegetables for pretty much everybody. I know there's like a whole thing out there that's, fermented, that's how we're going to heal our gut. Haven't seen that. I'm sure it's good for somebody. We don't know any of those people, so we don't recommend it.
Those things is under the category of what used to work really well.
Used to work really well.
Before our toxin buckets became so full that many people are actually histamine sensitive and don't realize it. And all you're doing is adding more gasoline to the fire of just bug overload.
Yeah. And we used to live next door to Pickled Planet. And I would, this is an interesting story, but I would pick up a case of either fermented pickle juice or sauerkraut juice or anything along those lines or pickle whatever, and had that as a big part of my diet. That was about the worst time I ever had my life.
No, you went down like a whole quart of.
I know, yeah. And again,
fermented,
I mean,
stuff. Wonder why you were in agony for a day.
Yeah, dose makes the poison. Maybe I could have had a little tiny toothpick amount of it and done really well. I don't know, but.
With anything.
Yeah. It could just be me. Your mileage may vary. If pickled stuff works for you, then absolutely go for it.
Great.
Yeah. Go have a ball. But yeah, for the people that we know, like, that doesn't tend to work well at all. We're definitely not recommending it, especially if you have any kind of histamine issue. Fermentation is bad. Probiotics, probably not good. Sporebiotics might be okay.
And it's usual, like, my orientation around this piece is always the mental health piece. Do you feel like yourself?
Yeah.
Do you have the ability to be resilient in your own life? And my favorite thing about watching people commit to an animal-based diet for at least a period of time during the deep healing work is that they go from totally overloaded by life, anxious, depressed, even suicidal, to feeling, okay, I can do this. I can do the deep work. I can do the coffee enemas. I can commit to the detox piece. I can get the mold out. I can work on the parasites, and I can live my life, and I can trust myself again.
Yeah.
Because you're out of that fermentation, freak out, up and down swing.
Yeah. Things that often come up, I would say olive oil comes up often. Mm-hmm. It's like, why? We've already introduced some really good fat options. I have no idea why anybody would go in that direction. Coconut oil, again, don't understand. I don't get it. So you're going to have way more success just doing butter, ghee, tallow. Those are the options that work really well. What else can I add? Seasonings, like, salt is good. Outside of that, it's usually questionable. You're usually going to run into lectin, nightshades, like, obviously hot, like, people are like, oh, I need spicy this or that. That's probably not going to work well. So in moderation,
a little bit of a toxicaya for those spices. There's other ways to enjoy it.
Yeah. And we really loved our cayenne.
I know.
Yeah. Super tasty. Like, love to do that, but honestly did not work well for either of us. I don't think it's the nightshade issue. Yeah. What an interesting conversation. I think this is an interesting topic. I think it's like very, it is simple. It's deceptively simple. There are some details to it that people are working through. I know I follow a lot of people in the carnivore space. I suspect that many of them are working through these underlying issues that we talk about in the course.
Yeah,
I know, like, Michaela Peterson's been talking about mold recently. I know she lived in Florida. She was living in a moldy house or something. It's like, how much of her issues are being driven by the mold? And does she have parasites? Yeah, of course. Yeah, without any doubt. And if she cleared all that out, would she still have the issues? Would she have to be so strict with her diet? Don't know. Like, hard to say, but it would be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really about it.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your insights and your journey with us today with your usual grounded, no bullshit. This is the way it is.
That's the way it's panned out for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think some people get bored by the diet. I would just say there's so many YouTube channels out there talking about how to prepare different carnivore meals. There's a few cookbooks out there. Explore those. It should not be a boring diet. It should be an extremely delicious diet, like, with a lot of good options. It should never get boring. There's so many ways to prepare different things. It should be really interesting. It should be extremely satisfying. It's definitely not like a calorie restricted diet. It's restricted in the sense that it's a lot of meat. It's a lot of the same, but there's a lot of different variety in that, I think. So,
yeah. And I think we have to stop looking to food to be our entertainment. There's a grief that comes along with that because we love to celebrate socially that way. And a lot of us are living out of alignment for long periods of time in our life, and food is our only comfort. And for a long time, to me, it felt like food was my only friend. And I was like making up for some nurturing that I never really experienced when I had wanted it earlier in life. Okay, so all those things could be true. And I've certainly tried every type of eating disorder. So I'll be the first one to say that. Truly, I'm very good at all of them. However, you know, what we found to be true, no matter what the food approach is that's right for you, while you're doing the deep healing work, while you're addressing your root causes, the most helpful thing I can say to you is live small now to live big later. You're not trying to get entertained by your food right now. Mm-hmm. You want it to be the least amount of work possible for your body right now so that your body has the most energy to heal and repair on any given day. That is the kindest thing you can do for your body. So step away from the 70 ingredient vegan bowl where you're eating the rainbow and has every kind of superfood that's been marketed to you because they're super profitable. And let's unhook from that marketing engine and start asking, how do you feel after you eat? And how can we make this simpler so you can heal faster?
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, I guess, you know, the other thing to bring up is like the social aspect of there's a significant push towards plant-based eating as though if we all eat plant-based and eat fake meat and fake food and all this stuff, then we're somehow going to save the planet. That people have to just kind of work through and just use some simple logic. I think if people kind of land on a regenerative agriculture thing where there's animals and animals poop and regenerate the soil and they eat plants, and that seems just kind of tried and true approach, that's probably going to work better than just monocrop, like crazy fields of glyphosate bombs and pesticides and all that stuff. So even organic stuff is sprayed.
Yeah, there's so many interesting things to that. And I'm like an almost lifelong vegetarian having to unhook from that engine. I truly watch people love the planet and love their bodies and respect animals as medicine when they return to meat. And you're still killing animals when you're doing those large monocrops. You're just doing it in a different way to make room for your food. So, you know, what's the tally side by side? How quickly or slowly are you doing it? You can split those hairs if you want to, or you can get well and then discuss it further.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's true. A really interesting conversation, but I hope that everybody is really considering what's the most respectful way to do this for your body and for the planet, instead of just following along blindly with propaganda that serves a few big corporations. You really have to ask some questions there and dig deeper and follow the money.
Good point.
So interesting. Okay, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. That was super fun,
Hope everybody got a lot of it.
Thanks for listening. Go to detoxrejuvenation.com to find the links in the show notes to everything we covered in this episode. Please subscribe, review, and share with other humans who need this precious information. Let's help each other. Until next time, love, Sinclair.